Welcome to the Remote Edition podcast. I'm so excited that you're here. On this podcast, we bring you the latest from the world of remote work. We share stories from people working remotely from all over the world, whether they're entrepreneurs, digital nomads, freelancers, people who have remote jobs, or even people that run co-working spaces. We are sharing their stories. Whether you're already working remotely, whether you're thinking about it, or even managing a distributed team, this podcast is for you. A little bit of background about me and why I'm doing this. So I spent 6 years working in corporate sales roles in London, including the largest investment bank in the world, a San Francisco fintech unicorn. Despite these being quite impressive companies to work for a lot of people, I always felt like something was missing. And I did a lot of soul searching and asking myself why I felt like this. And I realized I just hated going into the office every single day. I became so bored of being in the same place, cramming in my holiday to 25 days. And I kept asking myself why we needed to do this when technology allows us to work from anywhere. The routine started to really get me down, so I did a lot of personal growth work and ultimately decided to take the risk, quit my job, start a podcast, and move to Bali to explore the world of remote work. And what I discovered in Bali absolutely amazed me. There are entire communities of super, super smart and talented people working and living remotely from all over the world, all doing different things and actually excited about their work. And most of them had left huge corporate jobs because they were restricted to staying in one place. From then on, I became obsessed with this way of working. It opens up so many opportunities for you to travel, spend more time with loved ones, or just do more things that you love whilst being more productive and generally happier. It also levels the playing field for global talent, which I think is something that can really change the economic landscape, solve issues in overpopulated cities, and ultimately contribute to reducing global inequality. And I just think this is so amazing. So I want to help more people take advantage of this incredible way of working. And through my guest stories, you will learn all about how they came to work remotely and the tips you can take into your own career and business. This week, I interview Liz Rebott, and she is the co-founder of Outsite. And Outsite is a collection of spaces around the world built for the remote work community. And in their spaces, they have areas for co-living and co-working. And their mission is ultimately to help people build location-independent lives. And I love Outsite. I've been to the one in Bali. It's such a beautiful space. It's so tropical and an amazing little bungalows for the co-living aspect. And they also host some incredible events there as well. And Liz and I chat all about how she started as community manager of Outsite's first site on the west coast of America to becoming co-founder, and the journey along the way of getting investment and expanding to 28 sites now, I think they have, across the world. And it's a super interesting chat, and I loved hearing more about Liz's story and her thoughts on remote work and how she thinks the 9-to-5 schedule will no longer exist in the future, which I totally agree with. Welcome, Liz. Thank you so much for joining me on the show. I'm really excited to kind of delve into the business that you've built Outsite and all your views on kind of the future of work and remote work and everything like that. But initially, please could you just introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yeah, thanks for having me. So my name is Liz, and I am the head of operations for Outsite. And for those of you who don't know what Outsite is, we are a global network of co-living spaces. Right now we have about 30 locations all over the world.
Yeah, and my exposure to Outsite is that you have one here in Bali, and I've been to some great events there. So we connected through that, which is great. But I would love to kind of rewind a little bit and start with your experience in the corporate world, because I know that you started out there, and I would love to kind of take the listeners through this journey to up to actually starting Outsite. So could you talk a little bit about your experience in the corporate world? What were you doing, and what did you like and what did you not like?
Yeah, so we call it the corporate world now, but it's a, I was working in a hospital, actually. I was working
okay.
in which is kind of, it's not a corporate job, but it's basically, you know, it's essentially the same thing. You work 9 to 5.
Yeah.
And I worked in administration for about 5 to 7 years, and it was very boring. it was 9 to 5. You go to the office, you do the same thing over and over. There was no room for creativity, really. You're stuck in the same office every single day doing the same thing. I really missed, like, the fact that you cannot have any kind of creativity. And also another thing that was really hard for me was because here in the US, I don't know how it is, I'm sure in Europe it's different, but in the US, your usual corporate job only gives you 2 weeks of vacation.
Yeah, you have it tough in the US.
Yeah, so to me that seemed like, I cannot believe that I'm basically wasting my time working every day to just have a 2 week vacation and then go back to do the same thing over and over again. It seemed to me a little bit like Groundhog's Day, where, you know, every day is the same, and that was driving me a little bit crazy.
Yeah,
I at one point took a vacation to go back home in Puerto Rico, and I was thinking, like, I'm not sure this is really for me. And so it's funny because when I went back from that vacation, I decided to actually just move to California and leave kind of everything behind. Of course, I got another administration job because that was what my experience was in.
Yeah.
But once I moved to California, I actually had the chance. I met Emmanuel, who was actually the main founder of Outsight. Mm-hmm. I had the chance of being the first community manager in Santa Cruz. I was definitely looking for something to get my creative juices flowing, and this to me seemed like a great opportunity. So I started as the first community manager of Outsight in Santa Cruz, and I thought it was great. It was also like great for me because I was new to Santa Cruz. I had just moved there, and it was a great way to meet people. At that time, which was in 2014, when we first started like our beta location in Santa Cruz, co-working was like really new. Now everyone knows what co-working is. No one knew what co-working was back then. At least it was very new to me. In San Francisco, it was booming with people with new ideas, new co-working spaces, what we call now co-living co-working. At that point was only an idea, and there were not a lot of people doing it.
Yeah.
I think the closest thing that people could understand at that time was Airbnb, and even Airbnb was, people were like, what, you're sharing a house, you're sharing a place with someone else. No one really not a lot of people were open to that idea, which now seems completely normal. So that's how I started at Outsight, and that's how everything started.
Amazing. And at that time, was the Outsight that you started working in, was it co-living as well, or just co-working to begin with?
So we were doing both co-living and co-working. That's how the idea started. It actually started because it was a lifestyle idea, basically. Oh, wouldn't it be so cool if you could like meet new people, but actually stay there and have the networking and co-working aspect that you get at a co-working space, but at a place where you can stay in. So you basically mix the two ideas between Airbnb and WeWork, which was at the time like the main co-working space that everyone was talking about.
Yeah.
And that's how we started. And it was a lifestyle company. Like, we started as a lifestyle company, something that was like a side job for me. It was fun. It was cool to meet people. You know, it was for the creativity side of it was so great for me because everything was new. Everything we had to create from scratch. There were always ideas flowing. And this would be from starting something to then you get feedback, then you change things and you tweak little things here and there. And, you see the process, and that's really great. That's one of the things that I love about it.
Yeah, I bet. I just really love this kind of story that you took this community manager role in this tiny little startup, and it's kind of evolved to being like a leader in the company. I love to kind of understand how that journey worked. How did you go from just starting out as the community manager to actually being a leader in the company. And I think this is a really inspiring thing for the listeners to hear as well, because for anyone like thinking about doing something different, if you want to be an entrepreneur or be a co-founder in a company, you don't have to like go in big straight away. There's so many opportunities out there where you can kind of prove your worth and then, you know, jump the ladder, especially at like a very small company to begin with. There's so many opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. So I really believe that, you know, one of the main things for me and when I'm hiring, what I also look for is hard work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, someone can be super skilled and super intelligent, but if they're not willing to work hard, that's really hard. So for me, as long as you're willing to work hard, you know, you can do anything you want.
Yeah.
For me specifically, going from the community management role, it was basically, I kind of fell into the position because I was the first community manager. And then when we opened the second location, it kind of evolved without me even knowing. Like, it was like natural, like a natural flow, because I was already there and we were opening new locations. I started doing it for the second location, and then we needed a new person for the other. So it's kind of like I evolved without even knowing that I was going that way. But even when we hired, like even today, when we hire someone for the company, we love to hire from within, and we love to like grow people who come with us through the community management positions, like all the way up to, you know, becoming event managers or et cetera, because it's a really great way to get into the company.
Yeah, I think that, and I think that's amazing. It's an amazing thing about startups that your role can change. So for anyone listening that's looking and you see a role that's kind of interesting, don't necessarily take it on face value, because it can evolve so quickly in a smaller kind of organization that's early stage, like as it did for you, Liz. So I'd love to talk a little bit more around how Outsite then evolved to having so many sites, which it has now, all over the world. And I know this is probably a question that could take hours to answer, but I'd love for you to chat a little bit about that journey and how you went from one or two locations to, you know, having multiple on multiple continents.
Yeah, so at one point, like I said, we started like lifestyle, like, you know, let's see where this goes. Like, we had one location, two locations, this is cool, you know, we're in California, we're next to the beach. It was very much lifestyle. And so at one point we decided, okay, we are going to just keep doing this lifestyle, or do we want to go big? You know, do we want to take investment and grow the company and open more locations and go fast? Mm-hmm. And we decided that that's what we wanted to do. Yes. So we took in some investment and we started opening locations, and we grew the team and decided that basically build this global plan that we wanted to achieve. And part of that was creating the membership, which is a product that we have that's basically you become a member and you can stay in the different places and you get perks and all kinds of other things. But it's part of building that global network and that global community. And the other thing is, of course, that we started just opening locations. We actually do have like a criteria of when we open a location of what we're looking for. Specifically the locations, we cater, of course, to the remote worker, because it is way easier for them to stay in our locations than someone with a normal job. But we do have business travelers, and we have creatives, we have all kinds of people that stay with us. Because we cater to this remote worker, obviously the digital nomad friendly locations like Bali are a great hub for us. So that's one of the things we look at. And then that's why we now have like around 30 locations, and we want to keep growing our network, and we are still growing.
Amazing. I'd love to talk to you a little bit about the funding experience. So, because I hear a lot of people kind of in two minds as to whether to go for funding or not. What was that like going for the funding, and how did it kind of change the business and your experience within the business? So for example, like the people that gave you funding, are they quite involved or is it quite passive? How did it work?
So for us, the people are definitely involved, you know, they're still involved today. Mm-hmm. So that was great because we also get people with experience, you get a lot of feedback. But I would say to only take funding if you're willing to really work hard for years and years to come. It's been 5 years for me. And you know, we're still growing the company and it's still a work in progress. And we're still trying to go fast and to add new locations. So if you're not really into the fast growth environment, I wouldn't take investment. For us, it meant that, you know, we took investment, we have all of the funds we need to grow the company, but then you actually have to execute that. And it is a lot of work. I mean, I have long days, and you know, there's a lot of things that happen when you're going and you're trying to grow fast. There's a lot of different challenges that you get. Basically, you're on 24/7. But to me, it's rewarding, and I love that. But I don't think it's for everyone.
Yeah, I can kind of see the difference as well. Like, it's definitely important to, if you're gonna go the long haul and go down the funding route, it's definitely like, yeah, a long run, and you need to be passionate about what you're doing 100%. But if you are, you can scale like at a rate that you can't necessarily scale without funding, like you have at outside with so many locations. Okay, so I would love to take it a little bit to the work that Outsite is doing in the way that it's contributing to the world of remote work. And I know on your website you talk about helping people to build location independent lives. So I would love to speak to you around your thoughts on how Outsite kind of contributes to that, and what are the things that you do to kind of fulfill that mission.
Yeah, so one of the things that, you know, you hear about mostly when people are traveling is like most people that stay with us are solo travelers. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, we get a lot of couples too, like couples who are traveling. But if you stay at an Airbnb or you stay at a hotel, you don't really have any community. If you stay with Airbnb, you have the host, but it's not always a consistent thing that you're going to get someone somewhat of a community there.
Yeah.
So the one thing we provide is what I like to do. It's not like the way the website describes it, but how I like to describe it is that is you come home in a different country. So basically the goal is to make you feel at home no matter where you are, because you know what to expect. You know that there's going to be a sense of community. You know that you're going to have the amenities that we provide, which are at every location. You know the space is going to be comfortable and safe. So basically, we're providing a home for you in no matter what country you go to. That's at least the goal in the future. We don't have a place in every country yet.
Yeah.
That's how I like to describe it. And I use Outsite. I stay at Outsite myself. And that's exactly the feeling that I get whenever I go into an Outsite.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's a great mission. And obviously, I've visited the one in Bali, and I definitely get this sense of, I've been to the events there in the evening and definitely get this sense of community, because I've met people that are staying there. I've met people who are staying long-term in Canggu in Bali that just come to Outsite for events and co-working. People are pleased to have this community and they want to make friends, and it's very easy, like the conversation flows, and it's very easy just to kind of go up to someone and start a conversation, and people are from all over the world. And I just think that that's a really nice environment to build, especially in places like Canggu in Bali, where it's such a hub for remote workers, and like loneliness can be a big like challenge with this kind of lifestyle. I would love to talk a bit about opening the new Outsites. How do you think about going into a new location? How do you kind of assess where you want to go next?
So we actually have people that are actively looking for places for us. That's one of the things. So it's probably not as magical as people think.
Yeah.
But we also have we get a lot of people that contact us, which is amazing. That people that actually have properties and that want us to
master.
So that's like great. But first thing we look at is location. We actually send out surveys annually to all of our members and see where they want to go next, or where they would like us to go next. And that's super helpful for us because we want to know what our community wants and what everyone is thinking. So first, that's the first thing we look at. The second thing, of course, is the property. The property needs to be based on the criteria that we have. It needs to fit that criteria. But number one thing is definitely the location.
Mm-hmm. Okay, got it. It would be good to kind of talk a little bit about these topics of the future of work, because you're obviously like right at the forefront of seeing all of this. And with your experience outside, what are your views on the future of work, how it's evolving and like evolving into remote work being more kind of widespread, and this also this notion of digital nomads, of these people who work online and travel around the world working remotely. So what are your thoughts on those kind of trends?
So to me, we always talk about remote work, but I think it's like independent work. Like going back to when we were talking about my corporate job, basically the 9-to-5 thing and the every day is the same thing is like, I think that's old school. I don't think that's going to happen so much any going in the future. That's not what people want. And you see more and more people going away from that, whether you have to be present in the office or not, that's another thing. But the actual having the same schedule, doing the same tasks over and over again, like that's actually, I feel like going away. I feel like more and more companies are adopting flexible schedules, and of course the remote work where they can work from different time zones. But to me, the most important thing would be like the actual schedule of the 9-to-5, which is like, I think in the future companies are no longer going to have that. You're going to be able to make your own schedule. Like it doesn't matter what time you're there, as long as you actually get your job done. That to me is one of the most important things I've learned doing remote work. With everyone that I work with, we're never like, oh, you know, you need to work exactly from this hour to this hour. Yes, it's super helpful to have people that are working together at the same time. But that whole thing of the schedule, I think in the future, that's not going to exist. And everyone will just work depending on their deliverables.
Yeah, I totally agree. I almost feel like we're kind of in this transitional phase with employers anyway. Like I think entrepreneurs and freelancers are kind of leading the way, proving that it's possible to, you know, work to your own schedule and you don't need to have this 9-to-5 thing necessarily to be productive, and doesn't necessarily suit everyone. But I think we're in this transition phase with employers where they're starting to see this demand for it. It's not necessarily strong enough yet that they have to take note, but it's changing. But I think it's kind of like this change of people have to just trust their employees. For some reason, before when it was like 9-to-5 and you need to be in the office, it's almost like sending a message that we don't necessarily trust you. I don't know whether you kind of agree.
Like you actually had to clock in and clock out.
Yeah, I know. Sometimes physically as well. Yeah. But it's, yeah, that's 100%. I think it's great. And I just think society and the workforce, we have different values now. And it's just logical to say, look, we're going to perform better if we feel better and feel happier. And what goes into making us feel happier, making the work kind of life work for us. I mean, there's not many things where one size fits all. And I think that's the same with work as well. Some people might work in the office 9-to-5, but I really don't think everybody operates at their most productive in that way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, completely agree.
Okay, so I'd love to talk a little bit about the building the community element of Outside, because I think this seems to be a really important pillar to your culture and a big reason why people come to Outside and stay at Outside and obviously travel to the different ones throughout the world. So why is that important to you, and how do you continue to kind of strengthen and build that community element?
Yeah, so it's definitely like our core is like why we created this. It wasn't only because, oh, it's going to be nice to work close to the beach. That's kind of what a lot of people market it as, like, oh yeah, you can just go and have your laptop and go on the sand and work from the beach. Like, that's great. Great for marketing also, but the community side where you get to meet the people that you get to meet while you're staying at Outside is amazing. Like, that was one of the first things that I fell in love with, just meeting people from all over the world with just different kinds of jobs, like a variety of just all kinds of things. To me, it was so amazing coming from a job where, you know, you're going there every day, you meet the same people. And if you're in the same community, you don't really get to experience that unless you actually travel somewhere. And I was actually just, you know, being the community manager there, just experiencing all these wonderful people, like staying there. Like, I didn't have to go anywhere. They were just there. It was, to me, like, I was blown away by it. And that was one of the first things that I fell in love with. And, you know, this always happens. Like, whenever you go stay at an Outside, you always meet all kinds of people from all over the place. And you get to form really cool friendships, and a lot of the guests and members that meet each other actually travel together and go and stay at different places together. And we have like wonderful stories. Like, we have even people that have gotten married.
Really? Oh, that's so cute. And I love that they kind of told you as well. Amazing. Outside marriages.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, I think when you think about the concept and you think about multiple Outsides throughout the world and the way that your membership allows people to travel the world but have something familiar and stable in the sense that they know that they can stay at an Outside and they kind of know what they're getting, I think when I think about that from the community element, I think that's really nice, because in a way, when you rock up at a new place and you're going to another Outside and you're like, right, I need to make some friends, at least, you know, you can say, oh, which ones have you been to? And like, you might share common themes and stuff like that. So I think it presents a really nice way into building a friendship, if you know what I mean. It's not so cold.
Yeah. And a lot of people think like, oh, well, you know, it's co-living, co-working, there's other people there to network, but it's not just networking. Like, you actually get to make friends and do things with them. And yes, networking definitely happens. Like, we have lots of people that have gotten jobs out of it. We have people that have collaborated together. There's been lots of that as well. Obviously, everyone is a remote worker and they're working on different projects and working together. But yeah, the friendship side of it and the actual community side of it is really amazing, especially because as a remote worker, or even if you are not like traveling, and, you know, even if you're not the typical person who's like, oh yeah, I'm going to go to Bali for 1 month or Tulum for 3 months and just traveling every time. Even if you're like a stay at home person who just works from their home, like, it can get lonely. Like, you're just working, like, that happens to me when I'm not traveling, like, just working from home, you're just working by yourself. And it's like, the pros of remote work are amazing. I think that that's one of the downsides, is that a lot of the times you end up working alone. And this kind of fills in that void that you have for some community, and to actually, you don't have to go out of your way to meet people because people are already there.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. And that kind of lends itself nicely onto my next sort of question around co-living. So co-living is quite a new concept to a lot of people when you compare it to co-working. And a lot of the listeners might not even necessarily be familiar with the term co-living. So it would be great for you to kind of explain what co-living is and what you've tried to create with that side of things from Outside.
Yeah, so to put it on like the most basic terms, is basically a space where you have shared common areas. It's basically everyone, it's like, to describe the property itself, like, you have, what we always look in a property is you have like the private rooms with the private bathrooms, and that we have a ton of common areas where people can actually network and get together. Specifically, we love to have amazing kitchens, because most of our community gatherings do revolve around food. Everyone has to eat at some point. So we found that food was like a very common thing that everyone would always join for.
Yeah, definitely.
So, in common areas, that's basically what a co-living space is, that it's different than your normal like hotel or your normal Airbnb basically.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I think like I've stayed in a co-living property before, and I think from my experience, yeah, you forge these really strong relationships with people, because in a way they become like your family, your like housemates and your co-workers. So it's like really intense like bonding. And I know some of my friends that I met who then moved on away from Bali. It was very tough for me. So yeah, I think it's a really lovely kind of way to meet people and create great friendships.
Yeah, and as a plus, of course, we have like the community manager who kind of is basically the moderator of all these events and activities that we have. So it's the space where you're staying, living, and sharing these spaces with other really amazing people, but you also have like a moderator who's a community manager that brings everyone together and does the activities and the events.
Mm-hmm. And when you think about like moving forward with Outsight and kind of the business strategy, is there more emphasis on like the co-living element or the co-working element? Because I guess it's kind of this ratio thing that you need to think about when you open a new Outsight, like how many rooms am I going to have? How much space am I going to have for co-working? How do you kind of think about that and put different emphasis on the different elements of the business?
Yeah, so we definitely value the co-living side of it more now. We still have, you know, we still give co-working a big chunk of our thoughts go to co-working as well. But our main focus is co-living. Like, for example, when we look at a place, we make sure that is good for the co-living aspect. And then we think about the co-working aspect. And the co-working aspect is always there. But we definitely think about the co-living aspect because it's the one that impacts our members the most. Because when you're going to stay somewhere, obviously you want, and you're staying or living somewhere, obviously you want a really comfortable bed, you want a really nice kitchen. And then you think about, okay, I'm going to have a desk and I'm going to have the Wi-Fi and the laptop. So there's like those basics where you first think about one thing, which is kind of like the bare bones, and then those additions. Also, a lot of our spaces, because our ideal property has an entire co-working space just for co-working, but a lot of our spaces actually just have one area of the property that has been converted into a workspace. So we definitely try to make sure with all new locations that the rooms also have private desks, which you wouldn't think for co-working, but it definitely helps a lot, especially if you're a remote worker and have to take calls and all of that. So every single part of the things that we do has that work element in the back. You know, we consciously think about it, but not necessarily co-working as you know it, of going into an office with desks and like office chairs, for example.
Yeah. Okay. I get it. That makes sense. And why do you think that co-living has become, why do you think there's, you know, such a rise of like co-living spaces and the popularity is definitely growing? Where do you think that kind of stems from in society generally?
It definitely comes from more knowledge on co-working itself, because co-working is such a, you know, co-living and co-working have always been kind of growing together. So the more people know about co-working, the more people know about co-living as well. And like I mentioned in 2014, not a lot of people knew about it, but then with as more companies were doing it, it's more becoming a popular thing. And another big thing is that more and more companies are open to working remotely. Probably if you ask your company to go and work remotely in 2014, they would have said like, oh, you're crazy. Like, how you need to be here. Like there's no way. And now you see so many more companies are letting their employees, even if it's just like 3 days a week or 5 days a week, or like 2 weeks out of the year, like they're actually able to work remotely. And this, to me, like has changed the business, because we have so much more like actual customers now than we did back then because of that, because more companies are open, especially because
also now there's more tech companies than there used to be before. And obviously remote work and tech go hand in hand. So I think that's one of the things of why it has changed so much.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think as well, like it comes, like building on that comes from a place of where, when we were talking about this trust thing before, the fact that there's co-working and co-living spaces with decent Wi-Fi, you know, in places like Bali, I think that kind of puts the employer a bit at ease. Like it's not like you're just going into the abyss trying to connect to Wi-Fi, like on a beach or something.
And yeah. Another thing is like before, like if you would have gone to like, say like an Airbnb and, oh, my Wi-Fi is not working, they probably would have been like, well, sorry, your Wi-Fi is not working. It's not a big, but nowadays, because everyone is aware of this, and even at outside, like we definitely take accountability. Like if your Wi-Fi is not working, we're gonna do everything we can to make it work, because we know how important it is, and because we know this is our customer. And like even us, like the staff, like we need the Wi-Fi too.
Yeah
So we're gonna if something's not working right, that makes that, like, you know, that makes that part of it, like for example, like that makes your work not be able to work from our location, we're definitely going to take accountability. And that's definitely something different, because you might go somewhere where they don't really care if the Wi-Fi goes out, or something that's actually really crucial for you to have while you're working.
Yeah, definitely. So important. The other major thing that I see you solving as well is the fact that when you think about a remote worker and like a, you know, digital entrepreneur, there's people are often working a hell of a lot longer hours than they were working in corporate, funnily enough, anyway. But it doesn't necessarily matter, because most of the time they're really enjoying the work that they're doing. But I think that creates a need to kind of reduce a lot of admin and a lot of tasks that you don't necessarily need to do or can outsource. And I think like that then creates this want to be in a place where, like a hub, where a centralized place where lots of things are kind of available to you, like a co-working, co-living space. And I think a lot of the listeners might be thinking, what, so I sleep basically at the office? But it really just does not feel like that, especially like in an outside where you've created, you know, focuses really on design, and it's just this beautiful kind of, well, the one in Bali anyway, with a swimming pool, like little like bungalows, and it feels very tropical. I think it's just convenience, like having, you know, kitchens and having place to work whenever you want to, and having your room, and then having your network of friends there as well, or people to kind of share experiences with. I think that also lends itself to the kind of a big problem that you're solving in the remote work space.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And we always try to get amazing locations, of course. So that definitely helps. That is, if you have an ocean view, you wouldn't necessarily have an ocean view from your house if you stayed home and just work from home.
Yeah, definitely. When you think back to your role in the hospital and how you were feeling then, and kind of the risk that you took back then to move to the West Coast and start out with your job as a community manager, when you compare it to where you're at now, like how are you feeling, and what do you kind of say back to yourself back then for taking the risk?
Yeah, so I never knew that this is what I was going to end up doing in my life.
Yeah.
Because I had no clue at that point, you know, it was like learning all about co-living and co-working, and I didn't really have a background in real estate or anything. So something that I would say back to myself when I was starting community management is basically, so cliche, but like believe in yourself, because a lot of the times, you know, and also be open to feedback, because if you're starting something new, you know, you don't have to know everything about everything, but you do have to be open to learning and to feedback as you know that you're, you know, as you're growing in your role. So believing in yourself is important, because, you know, sometimes if you have an idea, it's good that you're actually backing that idea with confidence, because it might be a really good idea. And when you're starting and you don't have the experience, that is hard to do. But I think it's really important. But at the same time, you know, knowing how to take feedback, because if maybe your idea is bad, but you can actually learn from that and grow from that.
Mm-hmm. If there's anybody out there who is in a corporate job and they're like, oh, I really like this idea of working remotely, either starting a business or, you know, going and getting a remote job and traveling, but they're kind of scared to take the leap, what would be your advice for those people?
I would say that, you know, they should try it out for a short period of time, yeah, and then they'll be convinced that that's what they'll want to do.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I know a lot of people that are always like, oh, I've always wanted to do it. And when they finally do it, do it for a weekend or do it for 3 days. You don't have to go, you know, you don't have to travel across the world to get this experience. You can be sitting in, I don't know, you can be sitting in LA and go to Santa Cruz or go to San Diego. You know, it's, you don't have to take a plane for 11 hours to get this experience. You can get this experience just from going somewhere new that you've never been. Stay in the place, and once you're there, like two nights, whatever it is that you want to stay, and try it out, you'll see that it's something that is really great. And you know, there's nothing that you lose with trying it out. Of course, there's the money side of it, because a lot of people are like, oh, but it's too expensive, or you know, I don't have the time. But to me, whenever I travel, I always try to make it as productive as possible, plan ahead. And if you're not sure about it, you know, just try it out for a short period of time, and you might end up extending and staying longer.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really good tip, because a lot of people kind of paint this picture on Instagram and stuff about this, like, remote work life and things. And sometimes it's not, like, overly accurate. And also, again, like, we were talking about before, one size fits all, this remote thing won't fit everybody. So I think, yeah, it's a really good tip that you should try out. And also, you make a really good point that, yeah, you don't have to get on a plane. There are, like, there will be co-working spaces, like, locally to a lot of people. Like, a lot of my listeners live in London, and there's tons of co-working spaces they could go and try out remote work. So yeah, really good point.
Definitely.
Okay, so we're kind of coming up to time now, but that was an amazing insight into, you know, how you built Outsite, and I love chatting to you around your kind of thoughts on the world of remote work and kind of the future trends as well. But how I end is a little quick fire round, so I just have three questions, if that's okay.
Okay.
Perfect. So the first one is, what is your favorite place that you've ever traveled to?
So, okay.
This is always hard, because I've always got, like, people that have traveled to so many places on.
I know. And let me see. And the thing is, like, everywhere I go, I love it for some reason. Like, there's always something that I love about it and something that I hate about it.
Yeah, what do you mean?
But one of the best things that, like, one of the best feelings I've ever had in my life was when I first visited Lisbon, like, some years back. Like, it was my first visit there. Lisbon was not what it is today. Like, it used to be, like, you couldn't find a cafe with Wi-Fi anywhere. Wow. Like, it was, today you can find them everywhere. But back in the day, like, it was, like my first, one of my first experiences in Europe, and it was my first time in Lisbon, and I just fell in love and loved it. And I still go to Lisbon, like, every year, and I spend a lot of time there because we have a location there. Mm-hmm. We actually have a big location there with a co-working cafe, which is amazing as well.
Nice.
But yeah, it was like one of those experiences where you know you're only going to experience it once, because now when you go there, it's not the same. It's a little bit more touristy, but yeah, that to me would be the one.
Yeah, I really like Lisbon as well. It kind of, like, really surprised me. There's a lot of things that I wasn't expecting. Like, it's a really, really cool place. And I know it's actually a really big hub now for, like, kind of remote workers as well.
Yeah, yeah. And the great thing is, like, you have so many things, like, driving distance. Like, the south is amazing. Just Portugal in general is really great.
I totally agree. Okay, so my second question is, I like to do things unconventional on this podcast. I think that to be well in life, sometimes you have to do some wild things and go against the norm and go against, you know, convention. So what's the wildest thing that you've ever done?
You were scaring me when you were building up to this question.
Everyone always gets a fright when I do this in person. The faces, like, I'm like, do I continue offering this question?
You know, one thing that I am is like, I am super like, well, I guess for operations you kind of have to be like that, but I am super like OCD. Like, I like everything in my place and everything. I need to plan everything ahead, so I never really do anything that I would say, oh yeah, that was like super wild. Like, I never have that kind of moment. I'm trying to think what would be the wildest thing that I've ever done. I don't see it that way, but I guess that could be one. So basically, you know, it's not wild and crazy, but I know a lot of people that did tell me I was crazy.
Yeah, definitely.
So basically, I didn't even finish high school. I didn't finish, you know, not that I didn't finish high school, but yeah. I didn't finish with my class. Like, I graduated in advance because I was like, you know, I'm so ready for the work, to go out there and go to college and work. Like, I was like super, like, I just wanted to get it over with. So
yeah,
I graduated in advance from high school, like a year before. And then I was 17 years old and I went by myself to, of all places, Idaho in the middle of the winter, and I'd never seen snow before. So
wow.
I got a scholarship. I went to Idaho. I went to University of Idaho, actually, and I was there all by myself, and everyone in Puerto Rico, which is where I'm from, told me I was crazy. And yes, it was a bit of a crazy move now that I think about it. And back in the day, not knowing anyone in the middle of winter, like really far from home, yeah. But I wanted to go to college. I wanted to do something and just get myself somewhere different, completely different. And I did definitely get that because it was completely different.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great answer, especially at that kind of age to make that decision. But I hear this a lot from my guests, like people when they get to the point where they're like, I need to do something different. One of the big things that they all seem to do is take themselves out of their environment. So yeah.
Yeah, it's like refreshing because you get like hit with so many different things that are new. It was super refreshing for me, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then the final question is, what is the best piece of advice that you've ever received, or kind of like your life mantra that you live by?
You know, like, go with your gut. I don't call it gut. I call it common sense mostly.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, like, you know, they get kind of, you can really get distracted with a lot of things nowadays, especially because, you know, there's so many articles and so many things, and we have Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and blah, 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 blah. You're constantly being hit with information.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a lot of people, like, these days, like, to make decisions, the main thing is, like, go with your gut, like, think of common sense, and whatever makes sense to you, make that happen. Especially at work, for me, like, having common sense is like one of the things that have helped me the most. It's super useful. And you stay true to yourself, basically.
Yeah, I think that's really amazing advice. And I like the way that you've put it, like calling it common sense. I think that makes it a bit easier to implement in a way. Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, Liz. That's been an amazing conversation. Where can the listeners find Outside and learn a bit more about you?
Yeah, thank you for having me. So if anyone is interested, our website is outside.co, so outside.co. And you know, there's, you know, if anyone is actually, you know, wants to talk to me directly, I'm on LinkedIn, obviously, first name Liz, last name Ribot, R-I-B-O-T. So, you know, feel free to reach out if you have any questions, or if you've never tried Outside and it's your first time, or if you've never traveled and if you're first time, or if you have any questions or want any tips or advice.
Amazing. Thank you. And I'll link the website in the show notes as well, so the listeners can find it. But thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
So that's the end of the episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I would be very, very grateful if you could share it on your social media if you enjoyed it. I would love to share Liz's story with more people. But have a lovely week, and I shall speak to you next week.